Should be live. We just put the pop-up chat here. Okay, so we should be live. And welcome to my podcast, Dima. I'm very, very pleased to be able to speak to you and ask you a lot of questions. I will just do a small intro in Portuguese for the public. Hoje vai ser mais uma live em inglês. O meu convidado chama-se Dima, ele vive na Bielorrússia e ele é responsável por um canal de YouTube, que é o canal Military Summary. Ele faz análises muito detalhadas e muito isentas à situação militar. Portanto, é uma abordagem do ponto de vista da ciência militar, digamos assim, mas tem sido bastante preciso e tem feito um trabalho excelente e por isso o canal dele até tem crescido e ele aceitou conversar comigo. Esta live vai ser traduzida mais tarde, quando eu tiver tempo. Para já vai ser em inglês e peço desculpa aos ouvintes em português. Ok. Now, back to the English language. First of all, I want to congratulate you for your work in your channel, Dima, because it's I think it's very, very professional.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And my question is, do you have any military background or studies in the military field?
To tell the truth, I can't give you an answer to this question because it's very... It's very important, and from my side, I can't recognize my personality so deep. So sorry, but this is like very important question, so I can't give you the answer.
Okay. I was not expecting that.
But nice try.
Okay. You did a couple of analyses on Syria as well.
Yes, I did a couple of them.
But your main focus is on Ukraine. Do you also care about the political aspect of the conflict, or are you just into the military science aspect?
I try to involve just military science, but of course we understand that there is no military without any policies. Of course, these two questions are very involved and very connected, and one thing depends on another, of course. So I have to be... I have to know everything, and I have to understand everything to build my projections, because my analysis, the most important part of my analysis, is projections, and you can't do any projections without understanding the situation.
Yes, and I was... how would you evaluate both armies in the Ukrainian conflict according to expertise, doctrine, means at disposal, For example, this is a very broad question, so I will try to narrow it. For example, the Russian army claims that it has a defensive doctrine, but they are on offensive maneuvers now. Are they out of their league? Are they out of their field of expertise? How do you evaluate their performance according to this?
You see that they have a lot of, they get a lot of experience in operation, while doing their operation in Syria. And what I see now, I see a lot of the same thing as we could see in Syria. So during that conflict, during the campaign in Chechen, during the campaign in Afghanistan, we see that the Russians have a lot of experience in some offensive operation, not just in defend themselves. That's the first thing. And another thing that we are saying about defense doctrine, but according to the Russians, according to their understanding of the things, they think that the land that the Ukrainians are located, that are living, is their land. So we can say that from some point of view, they're protecting their investments, they're protecting their history, their culture on the territory of Ukraine. So something different... Doctrine.
Do you think the doctrine, the military doctrine of the Russians, have changed much since the conflicts, for example, in the late 80s in Afghanistan, for example, the organization of the army of the old Soviet?
Of course, it changed, because we see that now more and more more and more value has such types of forces like drones, like satellites, like missiles, and so on. And of course, we need to understand that there is a big difference between Afghanistan and Ukraine. Afghanistan is the rock country, a lot of rocks, a lot of places where Taliban's and the Afghanistan forces may hide, may make some defense positions. And if you're talking about Ukraine, you see they're just fields and some forests around Izium. So it's a totally different situation. So that's why they can use such types of weapons like rockets, like drones to spot the enemy. So they change their doctrine, of course.
Yes.
Not the change, but they upgraded according to the new thing that we have today, like phones, mobiles, and so on.
Okay. Do you think the Ukrainian army, in doctrine wise, it still preserves the old doctrines, or is it acting according to NATO standards?
It's acts according the policy needs. For now, we see, we understand that the Joe Biden announced that he's planning to give to the Ukrainians around the help around of $14 billion, and there was a report that they gave just $6 billion. So that means that another $34 billion is up to go, up to come, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means that the Ukrainians needs to hold as long as possible. They need to keep these lands as long as possible before the support arrives. And after that, maybe the picture can change. We don't know because we haven't seen such in history, such like in the past. So that's why they're not following any doctrine. They're just trying to get and earn as much time as possible.
I ask about the Ukrainian doctrine because there is a thing that I watch on the battlefield, especially from watching your reports, is that I don't understand why they keep feeding the cauldrons with more troops, because it's evident that their generals would look at the map and see that a cauldron is forming. So why would they feed it with more troops if they get surrounded?
This is a very interesting question because there is a lot of opinions, a lot of options. One of them is just to keep this area as long as possible because they don't want to... because retreating is a very bad example. Know that today in the video, in an upcoming video, I discussed the situation in Gorsk Zolotoye area, and the situation was that the Russians took this town very easily. And the main problem was that happens during the rotation period. And there was like a case that some Ukrainian forces, which turn was to move to the cauldron, to this area to protect, refused to do this. So they refused, and that's why the entire cauldron collapsed. So, and this is not a very good example. So this is the reason why they're trying to keep this area as long as possible, not to give an example to the Ukrainians that there is an option to retreat, to run. Because if they start, we know that if anybody start to run, there is a high risk that everybody will start do the same. So, and this is the one. And the second one, of course, they want to show that they can. They want just to show that they can. That they're Ukrainians. They're strong people that can fight with the Russians. And they just want to give to entire world an example that there is no need to fear. You need to fight, and you can achieve success in this situation.
Okay. Do you think the quality of the Ukrainian troops is degrading, or do they still have a lot of well-trained men? I ask this because of I can only imagine. I don't know the losses for sure, but this kind of battle, in principle, is very heavy losses battle because a lot of artillery duels and everything. So I wonder about their capability of resupplying the front. With trained men.
You know, the Ukrainians are very strong men. Very strong men. We see this. And it's not just in this war, in this conflict. They were strong from the beginning of their Ukrainian civilization. They were strong in the 16th century, in 17th century, in 18th century. They were strong during the Second World War. The Ukrainians were considered as one of the most powerful soldiers in every single conflict. They're self-minded. They know what they're doing. The only thing they need is weapon, and they don't. But for now, they don't have any weapon. But like I heard one interesting note from one of the Russian military specialists. He told that if the Russians were giving the Ukrainians the weapon, with such strong men, the Ukrainians would be able to conquer the Europe because they're very strong. They just don't have weapon.
Okay. But do you think the with the because we are over 3 months of conflict, do you think with all the losses, and even if they have well-minded soldiers, but the training might not be so good because they have to replace the dead soldiers? And so what my question was in a way of knowing the capacity of replacing very professional and trained soldiers by other equally professional and trained soldiers.
You see that if we follow the reports, we see that the Ukrainian military authorities report just about the losses among the territory defense. If we will compare the losses among the professional Ukrainian army and the losses among the territory defense, we see that the territory defense has a lot more losses than the professional army. It doesn't mean that they're not so good trained, well trained as the professional forces, not because of that. But as I see, the Ukrainians are trying to save their professional army, their army which they're trained with the NATO specialists and so on. But from the other side, they need to keep their land. And to do this, they're moving there, this like territory defense, we can say this meat. They need, so they're moving the unprofessional forces for one purpose, to stop and hold the Russians. Meanwhile, they're trying to save and keep their professional forces till the West support arrives in July or in August or something like this. It's like my opinion, what I see.
Yes, of course. We are aware of that. I'm asking your opinion because I hold in great value your analysis, and everyone can then check your channel. I will be sure to promote it. I have a question from a listener, a Portuguese listener, that he asks, why does Russia contains itself in sending troops? Why it has such a small army if it could send overwhelming numbers to finish the conflict fast?
You know that to finish the conflict fast, we saw the situation that happened in the March in February. We saw that the Russians had a lot of losses, and not because of they're not professional, because of logistic, because of weather, because of everything, right? And so this is the reason. The Russians are trying to understand the situation. And if we remember the conflict in Syria, for example, this like the same, almost the same situation. There was a stable front line in Syria, and we see the stable front line in Ukraine. So we see that Ukrainians have no possibility to do any offensive operation. Yes. So they're standing on their position.
Mm-hmm.
So you need more troops. In two reasons. First one, if you want to do some offensive operation, like entire front line, or if you know that your enemy is planning to attack this or this front line, so that's why you need to enforce this area.
Mm-hmm.
But we see that Ukrainians can't do any offensive operation, so that's why the Russians don't need more forces to protect their front lines. Why do they need if the Ukrainians are not able to attack? If we're talking about offensive operation, the Russians have offensive operation and they have enough of troops. For now, they're fighting in Severodonetsk, Lysychansk, and we see that they're very effective there. And if we compare the situation in Syria, we have the same situation. The front line was stable. First, they used their aircraft to fix the ISIS, to fix the Assad enemy's forces,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't move. And after that, the Russians created one brigade. They call it Tigers.
Yes, the Tiger Forces, yes.
Yes, and they started to move the Tigers from one front line to another. And, for example, first they sent them to Aleppo, they took Aleppo. Mm. Then they sent them to Damascus, they
yes.
took Damascus.
Yes.
And now they just use one forces and they move these forces from one front line to another. Now
Okay.
the Russians are doing the same. They
Okay.
have a few brigades, powerful like tigers. They call them with number O. Like that means like brave guys, like O, you know, red line with red
Okay.
O, yes. So they're trying to move them from one point to another. Also, Chechensky Spetsnaz Akhmat, the same guy. So they're using these small groups, and if they define that they need to take this region, they move their forces there. After that, there. So this is their tactic.
Okay. I understand. So you could see this is the new Russian doctrine. Okay.
To use like special forces.
Yes.
To fix issue on particular front lines without like increasing the quantity of your army.
Okay. So not to make very big offensives, maybe to minimize losses might be one
losses,
of the.
Mm-hmm. Not just physical losses, but economy losses.
Okay.
And so on. Logistic losses.
Okay. Do you think the weapons that the West has been sending to Ukraine are making the difference? Do you think Ukraine, for example, would have fallen without these weapons, or do they this make a huge difference?
It makes a huge difference because we know that there is no even a warehouse in Ukraine that wasn't attacked by the Russians, so they are not producing new weapon and they are not fixing the old weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they need some supply of anything. And we understand that there were some warehouses in Europe of all Soviet weapon, but every single old Soviet weapon were moved to Ukraine already.
Yes.
And they need more. They need more and mm-hmm. more and more. Furthermore, there was, for example, if we're talking about artillery, you know, we know that, for example, the Russians are using 152 millimeters artillery and the West countries, NATO, use 155.
Yes.
And there was a very big warehouse in Ukraine near Balaklia, but in the very beginning of this conflict, the Russians took this warehouse, and according to the information I have, there are just 2 months, and after that, the Ukrainians, with their progress of using these shells, will lose their artillery because of lack of shells.
Yes, so difference in need. Yes, I understand difference in the caliber of the shells. One of my listeners is asking how long can Russia sustain its offensive, or do you think it has really all planned, designed to sustain it economically for a long time?
Anyway, I think that the Russians want to see the winter. They want to understand what is going to be in winter, not because of Ukraine. They want to see the prices for gas, for oil. They need to test the situation. So, of course, they will try to. And after winter, they will decide what to do next. But before, they won't stop this operation. They need to see. They need to. They need to the price for gas around 4,000 euro per barrel. I don't know the value the people are buying. So
yes, okay. Do you think Transnistria is the goal in the south?
Yes, it might be the goal because of the same situation with the ammunition. Transnistria has the warehouses, the old Soviet warehouses with the Soviet weapon, and one of the most important with those 152 millimeter shells that Ukrainians have a lot of artillery systems, but they don't have a lot of shells. And there is a warehouse, and some specialists, military specialists, are saying that that the country like Ukraine can have a war conflict around 10 years with those warehouses. There are mm-hmm. a lot of ammunition and shots. So this is the reason why Transnistria might be a target. And like this, in the beginning of this week, there were some rumors that in the Zelensky office, his closest people suggested him to consider this operation in the future one more time. So maybe we're going to see the operation in Transnistria very soon.
Okay, I was asking, thanks for the answer, but I was actually asking if the Russians want to reach Transnistria in the south.
Of course, because first of all, the Russians they need one of the most target important goal for the Russians in this conflict not to like to take the entire control of Ukraine. They need a border between European Union and the Russia on the south because they have their gas pipelines, oil pipelines, and they want to do this without any middle country between them. So that means that I think that it might be their primary goal to establish control, to connect with Transnistria.
Do you this is a rather okay offside question, but and now I just ask an honest answer. Do you, when you analyze the military situation, do you let yourself slide to one side or another side? If you like prefer, oh, maybe this side should do this, like, you know, like when you have a teams, two teams playing, and you prefer that one team wins.
I must say the following situation. Everything is very complicated. For example, I am from Belarus. Belarus is the closest ally of Russia, at least from the one hand. Right, so we are like on the same boat, but from the other side, my wife is from Ukraine, and she's not from DPR or LPR. Like she's from Ukraine, like that is under Zelensky. So I am under two fire from my wife and from the policy perspective in the country. So that's why I can't choose the side, and because in my first videos there might be some notes that I can choose one of the side, but usually my wife start to call me like the sipper. So that's why I'm trying to be in the middle always.
Yes, but it actually, I made this question, but I can say that you try to do that. When I announced you to the Portuguese public, this is one of the things that I referred, that you are very neutral on your comments. But that was just my curiosity. When you are doing your analysis, I noticed that you care to refer all your sources. And you go to the Ukrainian sources and you go to the Russian sources. Which sources do you trust more by the things that you have seen so far? Which are the most reliable sources?
The reliable of sources depends on the situation. There are three types of situation: defense situation, offensive situation, and middle situation when nobody defense, nobody offense. If we are talking about the offensive situation, I try to rely on the offensive side because they want to achieve some success and they want to show their updates as fast as possible, showing their progress. And sometimes they try to show the real situation because nobody will say that they took Kyiv if they're very far from Kyiv, right? And in the offensive state, I don't believe to defend part of information because they try to lie or try to stretch the information in time, saying that they lost this town or something like this. So I believe to the state. If they are offensive state, I try to believe to offensive information more than the defense state information.
That was a very, very clear answer. And one straight question now is, who do you think is winning the war?
I think that nobody winning this war.
From them?
Everybody loses. Everybody loses because I don't know what's going to be next, but I'm sure that
But
nobody wins
you
this war.
think no you think no side has a military advantage on this conflict?
No, of course, if we're talking about advantages, I think that the Russians have advantages. But if we're talking about the goal to win and to achieve like the paradise on the earth, I think that nobody comes closer. Everybody step far back from this situation.
Yes, and that was not my My question was from the purely military point.
The Russians have advantages, and their advantages like is obvious.
Okay. Do you think the Ukrainian Air Force, because we haven't heard much about the Ukrainian Air Force, is there still any Ukrainian Air Force that can do some things, cause some problems? And also of the Ukrainian Navy, what's your assessment on those arms?
Today I have a very interesting comparison of the last three wars in the world. If we were talking about the Syrian conflict, that was the war of air forces, because there was a great significant diminution of Russian air forces, and because of that they won this conflict. After that there was a conflict in between Armenia and Azerbaijan for Karabakh. That war was the drones conflict. Who had the better drones? Those that side won this conflict. And if we are talking about this conflict, people already call this conflict of artillery conflict. Who has the better artillery? This side has significant success, and we see this. Mm-hmm. So that's why air system doesn't change anything in this conflict. We don't see neither Ukrainian air forces nor the Russians. So we can see them, but very far deep in the back. Like nobody flies on the enemy territory. Nobody. Everybody tries to fly on their own territory and to shoot from very far from the front line. So that means that there is no air battles at all. There was some in the beginning. There was some in the beginning, but now I can't say that it's like game changer factor in this conflict.
Okay.
If we're talking about the naval, about the ships, the Ukrainians had some fleet, small, in Odessa. There is a port there. Of course, they have possibility, but it's a very small boat. These boats still can attack, but they can't do and solve any problems. They lost a lot of fleet near Bile Island, Snake Island, and after that, they lost a lot of fleet near Charkov, because they are mined this area, but the Russians fixed that issue like the previous week. So I'm not sure about just boats.
Okay.
Boats.
Now I want to ask you about your opinion on some of the targets that the Ukrainians have been choosing to do their offense or bombardments. First of all, Donetsk. What is the reason for them to start shelling civilian areas in Donetsk?
First one, they do because they can. The second one is some kind of revenge. Just a simple human revenge.
Okay.
And the third one, of course, they want to force the Russians to be more to be more active on this front line. They want to work fast, and that means they want to increase their losses. So they want to make them to be far more fast, and that means that there will be more mistakes, more losses. So these three reasons.
Okay, like a chess move, so to make your adversary go on the offense and make mistakes on the offense because they have strong, very strong holds in this region.
Avdiivka,
yes, and Marinka, wasn't it, also?
Marinka, Avdiivka,
Piesky. How about Snake Island? Why on earth have they tried again? Snake Island with big offensive and apparently losses?
For many reasons. First of all, Snake Island is the perfect position to unblock the road for the Russian, for the Ukrainian growth, in that is located in the airport. So they need to, they need this pass and they need to control this area. The second reason is that this island is very close to the Ukrainian territory. And so that's why using this island, the Ukrainians can use harpoons, can use .50 rockets, can use 155 millimeters artillery to shell and attack the Russian fleet in this area. So that's provocation, like trying to force the Russians to come closer and then to try to destroy their fleet as much as possible, or to deal as much damage as possible.
Do you think, in fact, because it's taking so much time, the cauldron in Lysychansk agglomeration will be closed without the Ukrainians leaving it before? or do you think at some point the Ukrainians will see and will retreat their troops?
Today we got some confirmation updates from the Russian sources, of course, that the Russians entered Vovcharovka. And this is the town that's located on the east from Lysychansk oil refinery and from the south from Lysychansk agglomeration. And from this area, if it's true, if this information will be confirmed this evening and tomorrow morning, the distance between this town, Vovcharovka, and the road of life that connects Lysychansk oil refinery and Lysychansk agglomeration, just 4 kilometers. So that means that the Russians with this have already established the fire control over the road of life. Okay. And if the Ukrainians are planning to use this road for evacuation, their losses are going to be up more than 70-80%. So that means that there is no way to escape this area anymore from this evening. So everything is already done for the group in Lysychansk.
Okay, this is big news then. This is a very important update. What are the estimates of the Ukrainian troops on this pocket?
Around 15,000 soldiers in entire Lysychansk agglomeration. At least by the end of the previous week, there were around 15,000 soldiers. With Severodonetsk, with Borovskaya, with Gorsko Zolotoye, these forces were encircled totally today as well. But some forces managed to escape this area. So the entire quantity is around 15,000.
We are running out of time, but I want to ask just some quick questions. We are running out of time because you have your live stream very soon.
Thank you.
You talked about a possible riot among the Ukrainian troops. I think it was on yesterday live show you made. Do you think this is solid information? This is a possibility to happen within the ranks of the Ukrainian army?
Yes, today in the comments, my subscribers a little bit fixed me. They called that I should use the word mutiny.
Mutiny
in the army. So that and the situation in Gorsko Zolotoye Cauldron appeared because of this mutiny, because there was a rotation period, and the forces in Gorsko Zolotoye Cauldron, they stand there for a while, and they needed to retreat from this area, and the Ukrainian military authorities needed to move there some other forces, fresh blood in this area, but those forces refused to go there. They told, we are not planning to go to this cauldron because it's like suicide operation. They record the video, they publish this video, and they refuse to go. And this is the reason why the Russians, why the Ukrainian military authorities were forced to move their forces, territorial defense, that were mobilized just in May, like less than a month ago. The forces that haven't been in the real battle before. So this is the reason why this is the kind of mutiny that the forces refused to go. Not just like they were saying that we are so poor, give us more weapons, supply and so on. They refused to follow an order.
Okay. Would you say, because you've talked previously about the bravery of the Ukrainians, I have heard reports like this before. But this can be an indication that the morale is reaching a very low point. Do you think, my question is, do you think that if these fortifications in the Donbas fall, do you think that we will see another type of war, another different phase, like a fast pace?
We will see as soon after the Donbas falls and the Russians achieve their main goal, like to protect Donbas People's Republic and Lugansk People's Republic, we're going to see the next phase. But my projection is that I think that the Russians, under the Russian flag, won't continue this special operation. I think that as soon as they achieve their goals that they announced and informed to the worldwide, they will do some changes, and maybe they, it's my like opinion, maybe they will create another proxy thing in Ukraine,
Okay.
and they will continue their special operation using the separate and newly created proxy thing like DPR and LPR, but not them, something new.
Okay, that's very interesting to hear. Of course, it's as you said, your opinion. I have one last two last questions, sorry, about the Konigsberg. It's not Konigsberg, it's former Konigsberg territory.
Kaliningrad.
Kaliningrad. Yes, I just had this name because I was reading today, and I had this name. Do you think this will be a there is a risk of a new front line or something militarily happening there?
I don't think so. Now you see that this situation with Königsberg, Kaliningrad is perfect for the Russians. This situation is really perfect. You see that when there was a Second World War, there was a blockade of Leningrad.
Yes.
And now we see in the modern life the blockade of Kaliningrad.
Kaliningrad, okay.
So the Russians will use the situation as the media victory. They will
Okay.
try to show that you see that in the past century, the Nazi forces tried to blockade one town. Now the same forces, the same powers in the West tried to blockade Kaliningrad. They will try to get as much as possible benefits from this situation.
Okay.
And of course, this is the perfect situation for the Russians to show to the world that they can solve any type of issue, not just using the weapon, but their brains. And
Yes.
I think that they need to solve situation with Kaliningrad, with Königsberg, with their brains, if they are able to do this.
Okay.
And they must show the world this picture.
Okay. I do not mean any offense calling it Königsberg. I just couldn't recall the name Kaliningrad. No disrespect. The name is Kaliningrad. Königsberg was before when it was under German territory during the Second World War and before. One last question is the $1 million question or €1 million. Do you think there is a real risk of nuclear escalation?
Yes, there is a high risk of nuclear escalation. It is written in the Russian doctrine. So they're fighting as long as they can fight. But as soon as they understand that situation is not on their side, they must use nuclear weapon. It's written in their doctrine. So there is some points, some focal points they understand that. So, okay, guys, we are losing. And if we will continue losing, we are done. So we can't do this. So let's start the party. So it's written in their doctrine. So I'm sure that it's possible. It's really possible. It's more than that. Furthermore, it's possible even on the territory of Ukraine.
Very sorry to hear that. I don't know if you allow
Very
me.
sorry to hear that. Very
I
sorry.
don't know if you and we don't have much time because you have your live stream starting in 7 minutes, but I don't know if you allow me. I had to select my questions to fit this time because we had some technical problems before. I don't know if you allow me one
Yes,
last
please.
question. W
How much?
was it was it or was it not, because there's been a discussion about this. Was the Ukrainian army mounting troops, amassing troops on the DPR and LNR borders just before the conflict, like preparing for an offensive?
As I like to say, according to the Russian sources, it was.
Okay.
According to the Russian sources, it was.
Do you have any counter arguments for this or any other sources that say otherwise?
No. If we're talking about the Ukrainians, they didn't provide any counter arguments about that. So
Okay.
from them, there was no official like report about that, like to argue that we were not planning to do this. So that's why I think that we have only one official version.
Okay.
And according to this Russian version, we have what we have.
Okay. At least there is provable it's there is proof that the troops were in fact there.
at least we have like we can see this, that they were
Okay.
the most powerful and well prepared army in this area. This area was well trenched, and we saw that the Ukrainians were move a lot of weapon in this area. So like if we take a look from this point, we see that yes, maybe the Ukrainians really were preparing for this offensive operation against Donbas and Lugansk.
Okay, Dima, I will not take any more time from you. I just want to really thank you for this 40 minutes, less than 40 minutes of conversation. I hope we can do it again. I know that you are busy, you do, but...
We will.
Okay,
well, thank you.
Because it was really, really enjoyed talking to you. And I heard, I just wanted to tell you that I heard first about you on the video released by Gonzalo Lira.
Thanks to Gonzalo, he's a great man.
Yes.
We talked a lot together, so he's a very nice man, a very nice guy. He helped me a lot. He gave me a lot of examples how to do, what to do. So I respect this man. I hope everything is fine with him, his family, and so on.
Yes. Gonzalo Lira, for people who don't know, lives in Kharkov city. So it's on the Kiev government side. Okay, Dima, like I said, I won't steal any more time for you. I will follow in minutes your live stream as well. And I really hope we keep in touch, because I really enjoyed this conversation once again.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. E pronto, foi mais uma conversa sobre a situação da Ucrânia. Como podem ver, foi uma questão mais do ponto de vista, foi uma conversa mais centrada nas questões militares. Eu prometo, eu sei que não é fácil para quem não percebe bem inglês acompanhar estas conversas. Eu vou tentar, eu ando aqui a tentar formas expeditas de traduzir, ou pelo menos publicar, os vídeos que já estão em inglês, este e o anterior, legendado em português. Eu por isso peço só que aguardem. Quero, mais uma vez, e como o tema é quente, referir e reforçar a ideia de que o Odmir Livre Podcast não apoia e condena qualquer tipo de violência, seja de indivíduos ou estados a outros indivíduos ou outros estados, e portanto aqui a única ideia, o único objetivo aqui destas emissões é, no fundo, provocar reflexão, dar informação, dar opiniões informadas, dar diferentes pontos de vista que permitam a quem vê formar uma ideia, uma opinião o mais fundamentado possível. Não pretendo de forma nenhuma ser a Bíblia, longe disso, mas pronto, é isso. Sigam lá o Odmir Livre Podcast, pá, que isto é aqui um canal que sobrevive. Não, nós não utilizamos técnicas de, como é que eu hei de dizer, de angariação de massas e de visualizações e etc. Não temos sequer isso como objetivo principal. Se calhar pode ser uma asneira, mas a ideia é que isto não é a minha vida. Há vida para além disto, e isto já está a roubar uma fatia bastante considerável. Obrigado a todos aqueles que possam ouvir esta emissão, e pronto, e uma boa noite.
Podcast.